Yes, this is the Bible Quizzer podcast. Thank you so kindly for joining us. As promised, we are finally bringing you the mailbag episode. And to do this, we brought on our special guest, Mr. Mike Balka. Mr. Balka was my Bible quiz coach back in the day. He was involved in Bible quizzing for 12 years at two different ministries, one of them in South Carolina and one of them in Tennessee. He coached teams to four different major tournament victories. He currently lives in the Knoxville area, and he is supporting his church's local Teens for Christ ministry there at a local high school. So, as promised, we're finally getting to this mailbag episode. We gave everyone the opportunity to send in their questions to that mailbag at BibleQuizzer.net email. And we're going to just jump right into ones that we've received in that mailbag. So, I will go ahead and turn it over to Micah. You can ask the first question.
All right. So this is definitely a question I've been looking forward to for a while. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts. So here it is. What strategies can be used when two teams of varying abilities gang up on the third team during a quiz? And should teams do this? Why or why not?
Okay, the obvious strategy is this. If you have two teams, one is really elite and the other one's kind of okay, but not the greatest in the world. Well, when you're a three-team quizzing, your two top elite teams, they're gonna start jumping. Naturally, there's gonna be errors on both sides. But what one team will do if they're trying to quote gang up, I don't know that I like the term gang up. How about team up? Okay. If they're going to team up, what they do is they either trade when the rebound comes, they will sit for the full question, which greatly increases the likelihood that they're going to get it right. So what they're doing is basically they're ensuring their team is going to get right, and it does a couple of things. First of all, the team that is weaker, the elite team could just say, we're going to give all of those to the other team. Okay, so they start amassing the score, and the team in the center gets real nervous, and they quiz them, and it can throw their quizzing off. But they can also do is trade back and forth, and I think sometimes that's a little bit more lethal because they realize every time we make an error, one of these two teams is making points. And if one gets way far ahead, obviously they're going to keep sitting for the one that's further behind. And so the elite team that's been teamed up on, they have to be almost perfect. And it's really hard to be perfect when you're nervous and you're between two teams like that. So that's basically how the strategy works. Now, I've been on either side of this. I'll never forget the first time that this was done to me. It was Pleasant View, Kentucky. It was in West Virginia. It was my first year working with teams and coaching them. And Pleasant View, Kentucky was by far the best team in the country. There is no question. They had a massive program, had multiple teams. And I got in there with a bunch of elementary kids on a senior high, quiz competition, and they did that to us. But I didn't allow that to discourage me. I used that to motivate me. Because I thought, like, wow, look what they've accomplished in this ministry to get themselves in a position like that where they can do that to somebody else. Okay. To me, it should be more of a motivation to, I'm going to develop multiple people and get them where I have that advantage. You know what I mean? It's an advantage given to teams and ministries that work really hard to grow that ministry.
Yeah, so
And
you see
so
it as a you see it as a valid strategy that you can use once you've earned the right by having multiple teams.
Yes, I well, when you look at Bible quiz, it's a competition, and the Bible tells us to press to the mark, right? In Philippians 3. And then it also says to run that you might obtain in 1 Corinthians 9. So I look at it that way. I, as a coach, felt like I had a responsibility to my quizzers as well as to their parents that they've invested so much time in memorizing scripture. They're doing all this work that I can't do. But what I could do is put them in a position that increases the likelihood of them winning. They still have to answer the question. They still have to have the scripture memorized. But for me to let them down at that point could be very discouraging, and it could hurt my other program. And what you'll find is as your teams win and have the opportunity to do things like that, that increases their likelihood of winning. They get more excited, they get more encouraged, and very often they start snowballing, get more excited and working harder, and they feel like we can accomplish great things over here. So that's the way I look at it. I know a lot of people would look at it like, oh, that's mean. I never looked at it like it's being mean or ugly, because I know in life you're going to have adversity, especially in competition.
That's true.
I ran track for 9 years, and I competed in state 5A in cross country and track. And I know that there's no opponent of mine, when they get a big lead, they're just going to start pulling up and slowing up just so I feel better. Okay. They
That's
have
true.
to run to the mark, press the mark, finish strong, run like you're running to the glory of God. And that's where I was with my teams. I wanted them to fulfill their responsibility in memorizing scripture, mastering scripture. And my responsibility was to teach them the parts of the English language and to push them. And I would even, as a coach, I would go and be on the quiz pads in the summer. I would memorize the gas material so that they had to compete against me. And I would make sure I would work really hard so I was really pushing them. That's just kind of the way my mentality was with it.
Yeah, just a couple of thoughts here that I want to clarify with you. So, but on the receiving end, do you see a particular set of techniques or strategy that you can employ to dig yourself out of those situations if two teams are very visibly working against you?
Well, that's a very difficult situation to be in. Now,
At this, before you answer, I'm not going to name names of any of the questioners or where they're from on this, but I know the context that the question's coming from. Recently, what we're seeing is certain ministries that have multiple teams who are top tier. Whenever they have multiple teams from the same ministry, they are actively working with each other to take out the other team. Okay, both of those teams are top tier teams. So whoever that third team is, they're at a disadvantage from question one all the way through. That's what the questioner is trying to see if he or she can dig their team out of.
Very, very difficult, especially if you're two separate teams. In my opinion, that's more difficult because if they're both elite and you're not elite, you're at a disadvantage from the very start. You
Yeah,
know what I
well, let's
mean?
assume they're all roughly the same. Top teams in the tournament, but roughly the same.
If they're all roughly the same, I would basically tell my guys to put the accelerator down and just give it your best. Because if you start getting traction, then basically what could happen is you start rolling, the next thing you know, up you're up 60 to nothing to nothing. And then all of a sudden now they start getting in a situation where they start thinking, uh-oh, one of us two is going to lose. So I would come out of there hot and heavy and just say, look, this is what we're faced with. We got two teams. They're likely going to gang up on us. You give it all, do all to the glory of God. You just give it your best shot. And then we just leave the results to God. And that's how I would approach it. There's no way I would be putting restraint on and be saying like, hey, we got to pump the brakes here and all this kind of stuff. Because if you do that, you're walking right into a trap.
Yeah, I think I would have a similar mindset. I would just say in the situations that I've watched, it seems like errors are so much more critical on an initial because I mean, you either side, it's just working against you. But my mentality is if you have the opportunity to take out a ministry's second best team, and they're both really good teams earlier on in the tournament, I don't think there's anything wrong with pairing up with another team to try to do that. You're just benefiting yourself in the long run.
Yeah, no,
And I don't
I
think
would
there's
agree with
any
that.
ethical problem with that at all. And I would also say, towards the end of a tournament, I don't know if this is a bold claim, but one of the major tournaments that we won back when we were in high school, I'm confidently going to say we're not going to have won that tournament had we not played with another team to get the third place team out of the tournament, because we knew that this team, who will remain unnamed, was so superior to everyone else in a two-team quiz structure. If you're down to the final three and one of those teams is obviously better at a two-team quiz and you put yourself in a position to where you have to quiz them, why would you do that when you can avoid them, get them into a situation, beat them? I mean, to me, that's similar to choosing between a car or walking. Both routes will get you the same way, but one is a whole lot harder. So why not just take the car?
I totally agree. I mean, Colin, I think very much alike on this. Is what you're doing is you're looking at the overall strategy. If the goal is to win the tournament, you don't just look at every quiz match in isolation. You have to look at the entire tournament and
That's really
say,
good.
what will navigate me through this tournament? I have a responsibility as a coach to try to get my team to win. And then you look at those pieces and you say, well, this is a team that we can't eliminate early that will save us a lot of difficulty where we likely could stumble in the end. So you have an overall strategy. And yeah, I totally agree with you. I would execute that strategy to the best of my ability.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page. I just think a lot of times what happens is a lot of emotion gets attached to it,
Yes.
especially if you're on the losing end. And I would say a general rule of thumb is don't dish out what you can't take. You know,
Yeah.
if you're gonna dish it out, also you got to be willing to take it because it's a two-edged sword. But I totally don't think there's any kind of ethical problem. It's not personal. It's strictly business. You're doing what's in the best interest of your team. Same logic if you're in the playoffs of basketball or football and you've already won your round, you're going to root for the weaker team to pull an upset of the other team so you don't have to face them in the next round. I don't think that's any different.
Well, I would agree with that. I would probably take it even a step further and say that you should be realizing that when you're faced in the meat grinder between those two teams teaming up on you, that people are looking at you and looking at your character, and are you the kind of person, the character that can deal with adversity? You know what I mean? It is just a competition. This isn't life and death. This is a competition. You should be responsible and show your quizzers how to respond to adversity. When things don't go your way, be a man of character. And those quizzers will look at you, they'll have a ton more respect for you. You'll come out of that and you should say to yourself, how are we gonna deal with this in the future? In the future, they might have given us this time. We're gonna come up with a way to address it in the future. And so that's how you should approach it, in my opinion.
I think it kind of goes back. I think it's Ecclesiastes chapter 11 or chapter 12 where Solomon writes the line about there being an element of time and chance and everything. Kind of the same logic there. If you find yourself in a situation where two teams have quote unquote ganged up on you, it's tough. You can't control a lot, but control what you can control. Move to the next one. Hope that's not your second low. But also, if you're on the giving end of that, don't rely too much on that strategy because then that also can come back to bite you. But get an insight on that one. The next question is, what are the best strategies for studying? Now, I don't know if what I'm going to put forth are quote unquote the best strategies. I will just share the strategies that I used. But rather than telling my strategies over an audio podcast, I'm actually going to provide a link in the description with what's going to be just kind of a guide on what I personally did and the structure that I used to memorize new material, review it, refine it before tournaments and everything. And I will provide a blank template that you could print off and just write in with ink or a pencil and print off multiple of those to go week by week. So instead of answering on this podcast, I'm actually just going to provide you with a resource that I think will answer your question in depth. And when you see it, it will make more sense because it's just a lot easier to explain visually than trying to explain audibly. So, I want to pivot to the next question. Next question comes in. It says, what are some of the startup actions and costs to get a Bible quiz program up off the ground?
Okay, the things that I remember, but before I ever started, I traveled. I had a nephew and a niece, Devin and Kelsey Davies, who were competing. And so we started traveling to tournaments just to watch. And, weren't certain we were going to get our kids involved, but we thought we probably would. And as we started watching, then I started asking people. And God put a lot of people in my life who had been involved in Bible quiz, and I just asked them. I flew to Florida on a family trip, and our former next door neighbors, the Terrells, they had been involved in Bible quizzing, and they were doing very good. So I just went over to their house and basically interviewed Mrs. Terrell and all their kids. Mr. Terrell was out for the day, But I asked them, how do you do this? What are you doing? So I invested time and energy in just asking people, what are you doing? How in the world do you get these people to memorize this much scripture? How do they, you master it? How do you answer questions? What kind of questions are there? I invested a ton of time in just reading like the FQA Bible quiz rules. I got a hold of anything I could, and just read through it, tried to digest it, tried to figure it out. And then I had a cost of lights. That first year, we were just using elementary teams. And so I spent $500 on a set of quiz lights, and I was just like, I'm just gonna do it for God's glory, do the best I can, because this will encourage my kids to memorize scripture. So I bit it off, paid $500, got my quiz lights, and you've got materials that you had invest in. Year after year, I always invested in Quiz Pro. There's different software that would help drill you on the material. There's one also, Question Pro, which would generate questions. And obviously, you're gonna have to have questions. And you just gotta learn how to have somebody in your ministry that can quiz master. And so at first, you'll probably be pretty weak, but the more you see, the better you get. And so that's why I think it was pretty important that I traveled, watching all these competitions for a year or two before I ever had my kids started, because I was watching them, seeing what they're doing, trying to understand, just ask everybody questions. And those were the my main costs is was the travel, the Bible quiz lights, the materials, software, but also we needed like what people call a scripture portion. There's companies that sell a scripture portion where everything's highlighted. Well, I am a programmer by trade. I'm an accountant and a programmer. And so I actually wrote software. I downloaded a database that had the entire Bible in it, every verse by verse. And I wrote code to separate every single word in the Bible. And then I wrote code to determine everything that was a person and highlighted a certain way in a place. And then I wrote code to build these every year. And then I would just print them off and produce them for my Bible quiz team. So I was like, hey, I saved you the money in the scripture portion. And a lot of my quizzers started really liking, what I had produced, because they put it in their own notebook and they would customize it. They'd put a picture of themselves on the front, and slide it in the front cover and stuff. And they put words on there to encourage them and stuff like that. So we had very personalized, Bible quiz study materials.
Oh, that's
But
awesome.
It costs some money, but it's not too bad in terms of the materials,
Right. And I think
It's
all the software is sub $50, and I just throw a plug in there. We do have links to a lot of the resources for startup, and then also some information for coaches that are starting off with a new program and trying to get one off the ground for the first time.
seems like more of the investment is time rather than money. And that's probably the biggest thing people had to deal with when they want to start a team is, am I willing to take all the time? Because it really, especially if you want to be a top tier team, it is a lot of dedication, especially just depending on the group that you're starting with. Like, you could be starting with people who never memorized a verse in their life and teach them how to do that. So, we are going to move on to the next question here. So, here's the question: what makes a good Bible quiz coach, and how can I be a better coach?
I believe what makes a good Bible quiz coach is a coach that's committed to his quizzers. He is putting those quizzers in the best position to succeed. Okay, so the quizzer has a responsibility to memorize, to work hard, but the coach has the responsibility to take that quizzer in his skill set and put him in a position to win, and be willing to change and adjust what you're doing. When you see something doesn't work, then try to analyze and determine, well, why didn't that work? What can we do different that would enable it to work? And then keep trying things over and over. I mean, believe it or not, back in the day, we were using a degree of data analytics. We had one person that was documenting the questions, and then we had determined how much came out of the quiz master's mouth. And then the jump, if the guy got it right or wrong, what's happening? And then I would do an analysis in the middle of the tournament on each different question type. How were my quizzes performing? And when I saw somebody on every what question, this guy's it like a 5% conversion rate whatever, I would tell him, do not jump on a what question. That is, you are quote this verse guy. Okay, you've got to stick with quote your verse. I would try to adjust him based off the analytics, the things I was learning in the tournament. And a lot of times, people aren't going to have access to data, but you've got to take it in and try to assess what you're seeing. And also talk to your quizzers. They have a totally different perspective. Colin could be in a quiz match. I'm coaching him. I'm seeing one thing. We call a timeout and we discuss it, and he's seeing something totally different. And it can be very enlightening to me what he was seeing in his perspective and the things that he was gaining from that. So listen to your quizzers. As a coach, listen to them and reward them. I mean, one of the main things I did that got my kids so excited and enthusiastic about Bible quiz is I did whatever it could to be fun for them. And so I would tell them, okay, we're having to travel all the way down to 2.5 to 3 hours to Greenville, South Carolina from Tennessee. I'm going to buy you all a box of candy when we go. And we're going to make it fun. We're going to go out. We're going to have a really fun, good meal on the other end, And I would just, I would even tell them, if you can memorize all this material in the summer, I'll give you $50 or $100 or something like that, if you can do it. You know what I mean? Or at my wife, I remember like that first year or so, she told them that we'd go out to the melting pot. If you guys can all memorize this, these portions, then we'll all go out to the melting pot. So there's just a lot of different things that we did to reward it. Hey, we're going to take a trip to Colorado and let you go snow skiing and stuff like that if you show that you're going to put in the work and work. Encourage them to work hard, but then reward like crazy. As a coach, you got to realize part of that reward is their success. I remember seeing a lot of different people, quizzes on different teams who would be in a position where they would get a lead, their team would get a lead, and they'd get up and they would just all sit. Well, everybody would look at me and I would keep my people going. But the reason I was going is because I knew, like, for example, Colin might have started off the quiz not doing as well, but then he could gain some traction. We might be in a safe position, but it's compromising his medal or a position that he would finish in. I wanted to enable them because it made them more encouraged, made them more excited, enthusiastic about memorizing the scripture if they knew I had their back, supporting them, and I wanted to see them succeed. And that's very becomes very rewarding for your quizzer. You're like, man, my coach, he has my back. Like, he really cares for me. He wants to see me do well. That's kind of my thinking.
That was awesome. Yeah, I feel like it's kind of easy for coaches sometimes to get into this rut of almost like, especially when the quizzes aren't quite performing up to the level you want them to, or not doing all the work, not memorizing what they should. And you can kind of get into more of a pressure perspective, more of a negative, like you guys should be
Adversarial.
doing this, like why aren't you guys doing this? And it can really that just drags a team down. And I've learned that from some experience too. Even last year was like my first year with the team I'm coaching right now. And there were times where we would be in that kind of rut where nobody was doing anything. And I realized pretty quickly that pressuring or giving a more negative motivation just was not working. And you just have to very much like what you said, you had to really incentivize and really just put things in front of them, encourage them, be positive, and celebrate their little successes. Like even the smallest things, if you celebrate that, a lot of times they're very encouraged and they'll do more. And
It's
also,
amazing how much just kind words will motivate
absolutely.
them. Just to say, Johnny, you did fantastic on that question today. I can't believe the way you broke that question down. You analyzed it. You picked the right one. Unbelievable. Great job. And you say to that kid, and the kid goes home, he's like, man, that was really nice. They're motivated. They want to perform. You know what I mean? Feel like that you really care for them and that you're really pushing for them. You're cheering for them. You're like their cheerleader. They'll want to perform for you. You are the nagging coach that is like a burr in their side that is constantly saying, you're not doing enough. You're not the winner that you we
You're gonna
I
lose
want you to
them.
be. You're not going to have any success.
Yeah,
That's
on
good.
this one, I just wrote down a few points kind of to add on some things that I've noticed, both as a quizzer, briefly as a coach, but more so as a quiz master in recent years. things that I've noticed from people who I consider to be really good or really great Bible quiz coaches, which you would be on the short list for that. Some things that I noticed: one, they seem to always be willing to ask questions. Two, to echo both of your points, they seem more encouraging rather than discouraging to their quizzers. Another thing, I think typically if you have some what I'll call fast math ability, just to a little bit of analysis right in the moment is really helpful. Another thing that I think really is a difference maker that you can tell with coaches who have won multiple majors as opposed to those who haven't or haven't quite got to that level or just not able to finish are those coaches who are able to pull back and not get very emotionally invested in the quiz, where it seems like they have just a more calm under pressure sense. So it's said in football a lot of times, the team takes on the personality of the coach or the quarterback. If that coach is frazzled and they're nervous and their fingernails are gone by question 8 or 10 late in the quiz, what do you expect the quizzers to do? I mean, they're going to be as frantic, and most of them are in middle school and high school, which isn't the most stable or rational time in your life anyway. If the coach is not emotionally strong and able to pull back and, kind of be the calming presence, that's a disadvantage to a team. And then something else I noted, this was just from more experience being a quizzer. For the runs that we had at CI and the AACS run, my junior year especially, do you feel that we were very benefited by having a full coaching staff whenever we would have my dad, Mr. Prophet, up there as well, just to kind of note different things and come together? I don't know. I feel like we were at an advantage when we had that. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I feel like we were an advantage. I mean, you look at AACS, man. I had brother Trevor Prophet up there, and he's sitting there. It was calming to me to have Trevor Prophet because he's just got a very calm spirit about him. Even when you're in the throes of adversity, he's sitting there and he's just writing down the questions and documenting stuff where I can just grab his thing at any moment and look and say, "What just happened? I don't know what just happened here." Especially AACS on the stage at AACS, that can be rather stressful. But your father as well had a very calming influence on me. They were both very stable steadies. They would not get heated, and so it's very easy to talk to both of them and keep ourselves calm and not get all emotional. And I feel like that's a great advantage to any team. Because they're looking at their leadership, and if their leadership melts down, I mean, how many majors have been lost by coaches who got angry? That's I'd love to know the answer to that, because I mean, I've seen so many things where a quiz master, maybe they're having a bad day or they have a different perspective on a question, and they rule in a way it's not your favor. You can have one coach just go the wrong direction, and the next thing, the whole team is tanked.
Yeah, I think the poster for having multiple coaches on a team that just seemed to really work in their system was Heritage Mission back in the day with Miss Nada Rogers, John Ludlow, and Paul Lofgren all right there. And they might not be the best team there. They'd usually be towards the top, but rarely did they put themselves in a situation where they were going to be their own reason for losing. They almost just
I would
never
agree.
broke down late in the day.
That was always a very stable, steady bunch as well. They were great, especially Nada. Nada had all those years, and they were great. And she's also a person that taught me a lot. She's one of the people I interviewed when I first started Bible quizzing. She's one of the people I interviewed, and I remember she was all about encouragement. I mean, that she's one of the main people I got that from.
Okay, so I'll run through a couple more questions that came into the mailbag. First one, how does scoring work at most traditional tournaments? I'll run through this as quick as I can where it makes sense. At most tournaments, here's how it works. A correctly answered question is 20 points. Every error for the first three, nothing happens. On your fourth error and every subsequent error, it's minus 10. If you are given a free question and you answer that correctly, so initial question is incorrect, toss-up question is incorrect, and your team is given an opportunity to answer a free question, you hit that one, that's 10 points. Other main thing to note is if a question does go down to a free question, the next one, instead of going from question two to three, for example, you would have question two repeated. Some tournaments have bonuses So if a quizzer goes 5-0, for example, or 6-0, they might tack on 10 points to that. If you're in the PQA, I believe they still have what's considered a team bonus, where if four members of the same team answer a question, you get an extra 10 points. I think if it's five people, you get 20 points. But for most traditional tournaments, it's going to be 20 points for a correct, minus 10 on your fourth error, and every error after that, 10 points for the free question. All right, next question I'll throw out to you, Mr. Balkin, and Micah, you as well. You're a coach currently. What does a typical Bible quiz practice look like?
Well, for us, I had a candy jar that would be sitting up there at my quizmaster desk. So I had a one person that would always be on my side as a scorekeeper, and then usually I was sitting there as quizmaster. Every once in a while, I'd have somebody else just up there to support or discuss things with and everything. And I usually had coaches on either side of me, so I got a quiz table, coaches, sometimes on either side. And then you got the quiz pads, and so we've got 15 seats that are sitting up there with the quiz lights and the quiz pads. And depending on how many people you have in your program, you split them up so that they're on the three different quiz lights. I would try to make it fun. A lot of times I'd give kind of crazy names like the squeegees versus the jickets, and I'd keep referring to one team as like, okay, well, the jickets are getting closer or whatever, the squeegees are, has a great answer by the squeegees or whatever, just to try to make it fun and more exciting for the quizzers. And then I'd have a big candy jar there. And I had different ways, like if you quizzed out, you always got to come get a piece of candy, And just had different ways that I would incentivize them. We had a lot of different practices that we would do, especially when we were first early on trying to figure out how to answer questions. So sometimes I would go start the quiz by going to each quizzer, and I would determine a question that was on their passage, but very often a specific question type so that they're getting used to it. Like, for example, if it was a who question, I would give them a who question, but stop at who, and then have them try to go through the exercise of thinking through the verse, thinking who all the who's are, and then giving me an answer. And they might get it wrong if there's two or three people in that, but just demonstrating that they've got the skill to do that was of value. So I was doing those kinds of things to train them. So a lot of times in our quiz practices, I would do a little bit of that at the beginning, and then I would spend way more time where we were actually competing because I wanted to see what it looked like. And a lot of times you'd have a few kids that were off in a quiz practice, and then they would get really determined and go home, and the next time they'd be like a totally different quizzer. I mean, they'd come in. We had some of the most fierce competition in my quiz practices. I mean, there were some summers it was just insane the level that they were jumping and how much they just wanted to beat each other. You know what I mean? And so I was I'm a competitive person myself, and I would push them to compete, and I try to make it really fun and really excited when they competed and when I saw success.
So it seems like the structure of that one was not so much the quizzers meeting and a practice consisted of memorizing or refining. It was more quiz simulation and then trying to have coaching moments based more so on the jump, not necessarily the result to do good and bad practices there. Okay, Micah, how about you? How do yours
I
differ?
would say a lot of the things you're saying, like, are things that I've tried as well and do quite often. Not the candy jar specifically, but we do have incentives. Like, I gather their points, and then whoever wins the day gets like a big reward or whatever. Those things are always good. But one thing we do also, like, sometimes I mix it up. I have those drills, like what you're talking about with the who questions, more on an individual basis, like you said. I do that sometimes, and also sometimes if we're really struggling with new material, like we're not really very far in the new material, sometimes I'll give them like a challenge, like a half hour challenge, where for that half an hour they try to get like six verses or eight verses or however many, depending on their skill. I mean, some kids can do a whole chapter. It's crazy, but I just have this challenge, like a timed thing, where if you make it to this certain point, then there's a reward for you or those things, just to give them a little boost in their memory. Because sometimes it just that little boost, them memorizing when they haven't for a while, sometimes I can kind of get their mind going and they realize, oh, I can actually memorize. And especially if they're rusty, they haven't done it in a while, Then they go home and they're like, well, I just memorized a chapter in an hour, or I just memorized six verses in half an hour. So, I know I can keep going. So we do that sometimes here and there, especially at the beginning of the year, or if we're really struggling with new memory, then we do that sometimes too.
Nice. Like to see the different variety. I've heard of certain ministries, like they use that as their time to get kids together and memorize or refine. That's usually more of a school setting, but others doing more of a practice quiz simulation. So interesting. Good to see variety. I don't know that there's like a method that, works best per se. It's kind of what works for you, but
I
just
think using
variety is
variety
the style.
too, like don't do the same thing every time necessarily. I mean, unless the kids just love that, but like I try to mix it up and do different things. But the one consistent thing is that we do actual competition on the pads every time. That's an essential. So.
Yeah, and I know for part of ours, especially later in the year, gearing up for major tournaments, we would try to do situational quizzing where it would be maybe, I can't remember what we even like, quiz against anonymous or something, nobody on the quiz pads, and have, you're down by this number of points on this question. This team gets this to try to put yourself in those situations. So when it comes to reality, you ideally would rehearse what you've already practiced. All right, I'll
That's
go
good.
ahead and wrap us up. I appreciate you both being on here, especially for Mr. Balka for joining us. I just want to again say that if you have any questions that we can address in the future, utilize that email address. It's mailbag, mailbag at BibleQuizzer.net. And who knows, we might get your question addressed on a podcast. I would also like to plug the Cross Point Invitational Tournament, which will be held on Saturday, September the 13th in Indianapolis, Indiana. We're expecting a great turnout for that tournament. Lord willing, I'll be there quiz mastering. So if you plan to go, sign up quickly. The deadline is Monday, September the 1st. So I'm very much looking forward to that tournament. Thanks again for listening. This has been the Bible Quizzer Podcast. See ya.